On Thursday, the Atheist Visibility Movement lost one of our smartest, most eloquent, and one of our funniest. We also lost one of our most controversial, most polarizing, and our most opinionated and our most frustrating figures. Christopher Hitchens died on Thursday, December 15th. He was 62. He was a journalist, a frequent debater, a social critic, and a Johnny Walker Black aficionado. The lack of his presence in our movement and in the debate cannot be overstated. When we agreed with Christopher Hitchens, we championed his humor, his candor, and his ability to completely dismantle his opponent's arguments with seemingly little effort. He would sit there, seeming to pay little attention, sipping his scotch and smoking a cigarette, only to spring into action with an understated snark when his time to speak came, making it clear that his opponent was completely outclassed. And in those times where we felt that Hitch was dead wrong, he would still bring a degree of intelligence, forethought, and biting humor to his position that could force you to reevaluate your own views on the matter, even if you held the line on just how wrong he was. We value Christopher not in spite of the places where we disagree, but because of those disagreements. He never shied away from an unpopular position, and in that disagreement, he taught us the value of not canonizing the people we respect. He reminded us that even truly remarkable people can be both steadfastly right and disappointingly wrong. We can praise him for the things he did that we loved him, and condemn him for the things that pissed us off. And for a man who valued argument and critical thought as much as he did, I don't think he'd have it any other way. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today is Libby. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
And Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well.
So, yeah, that's the news. It's a sad, sad week for the atheism movement.
Yeah, it is. It's a bummer. He was definitely one of my personal favorites in the atheism visibility movement, and I really am going to miss him.
Yeah, he was one of the voices that sort of coaxed me in of coming out of my little comfortable shell of being an atheist but hating other atheists, and made me face, you know, what I believed head on.
Yeah, I think Hitchens was one of the people who actually influenced me to become an atheist activist as well. That I've been an atheist for as long as I can remember, but it really took a combination of him and Sam Harris to make me go, you know what, this is really important.
Yeah.
This is something that I should really devote time to, because there are people who say all sorts of things about us, and there's very little people who can eloquently and powerfully champion the things that I care about, and he was really one of them. I mean, the things that I respect about Hitchens is his willingness to jump into the lion's den, so to speak. That I really think there's kind of two different sorts of people in the world, and Hitchens is a class that I'd like to be.
Yeah.
On one hand, you have somebody, and let's say Bill O'Reilly is a good example, is that he's somebody who is very forceful when he's in his own little world and controls the microphones, and then when he goes on another show where the audience really isn't his audience, he seems diminished and smaller. Hitch wasn't like that.
Yeah.
Hitch not only could go on to his own speaking tours and speak really forcefully, he could go to a Christian conference, be the only atheist on a panel of fundamentalist Christians in front of a panel and an audience.
And make him love it.
Yeah.
And make him love it. And that was, I actually say he was more in his element in front of an audience that hated him than in front of an audience. And that's one of the things I really loved about him, is that he had that fight, and it wasn't one of those things where you had two people fighting and he just loved yelling at people. He loved making people who hated him love him.
He could
do that.
He had a serious talent for that. It was incredible.
Yeah. And so, as a result, as you can imagine, there's a lot of stuff on the internet about
him. To the shock and surprise of no one, a lot of unpleasant things have been said about Christopher since he passed. I'm sure almost anybody who has any access or interaction with the internet at all has already seen the fairly deplorable video from Brian Fisher of the American Family Association where, and I paraphrase because he rambles on at some length, but he basically says that Christopher Hitchens is in hell now, but only because God loved him so much that he gave him exactly what he'd been asking for his whole life. Yeah. I'm sorry. How smarmy can you possibly be? What really strikes me about that statement is it sounds just like what an abusive spouse would say to justify abusing their partner. But, oh, you made me do this to you.
I only hit you because I love you.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
It's for your own good. Yeah. It's what you asked for. I mean, come on.
It's really offensive, and I guess the tone I'm getting from a lot of Christians who've written about Christopher Hitchens in the last few days is that it's one thing. I don't think that a person should be forced to pretend that they respect someone just because they're dead. Christopher Hitchens didn't do that himself. He had a scathing obituary for Jerry Falwell.
Yes.
However, I think there's a line that gets crossed when it's not just, you know what, this person was horrible, the world's better off without them. The line is when you start reveling in this, I told you so, you're being tortured right now, and I'm thrilled by it.
If I may channel Christopher Hitchens, is what I find it hard to believe is that these religious people have the temerity to say that not only is he gone, and that's great, but now he's going to be tortured forever and undergo eternal punishments because he happened to disagree with somebody.
And the underlying assertion is that they're fine with it and they think it's great.
They're reveling in it. It's joyful. And as you say, he didn't exactly say nice things about Jerry Falwell. He didn't exactly say nice things about Mother Teresa. A skill that he had, which the Catholic Church was kind of happy for, since he was basically the devil's advocate for...
He was literally the devil's advocate.
Literally, yeah.
In the canonization debate over Mother Teresa.
Yeah, and the Catholic Church was appreciative. So, you know...
Because he was the one person who was willing to say bad things about Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
What really bothers me about a lot of the things I've been seeing on the internet is the two-faced nature of some of the things that are being said about him. If you're going to criticize him, if you want to be honest and say, I really didn't like the guy and we're probably better off without him, I think that's all well and good, but don't hide it behind this, this mask of, oh, I'm really being nice and I'm really hedging my bets and who knows what's really going on. I have a quote from a blog I'd like to read. This is from a blogger named Chris Honeholz, and he wrote a fairly long blog, so I'm pulling a few sentences out here, but I'm keeping the general gist of what he had to say in his blog post intact. He said, it is clear that Mr. Hitchens made a career of hating the very idea of God. Additionally, Mr. Hitchens debated with many Christians, and he had heard the gospel presentation many times. There's little question that by the time of his death, Mr. Hitchens knew what God required of him. We hope that we will find Mr. Hitchens in heaven one day, for we do not wish the wrath of God on any man. But we must also be honest and say that he may not have repented. It is entirely possible that Mr. Hitchens held on to his rejection of God all the way into his death. If so, Mr. Hitchens now stands before God in judgment for his sins, and not just for his atheism. And if that indeed is what occurred, then we Christians must mourn his death, for we do not wish hell on any man. But we also rejoice that God is glorified, because his justice is perfect.
Yeah. Not much I can say that would go on the radio to that. But
I love that the idea that perfect justice is kiss my ass or you're into the flames forever. The flame that cannot be quenched and the gnashing of teeth. Such a perfect just person.
Now, here's the thing. Somebody who writes for Vanity Fair and has the position in, you know, in America that Christopher Hitchens did, he didn't just talk about atheism, clearly. I mean, that was one of his biggest points. But for example, he was Fox News' whipping boy for a bunch of years during the Iraq War. And I kind of hated him for that, but he did. He did see what was happening and what he was being turned into by Fox News, and got the heck away. And I'll go you one further. And this is the thing that this is exactly encapsulates what I love about Christopher Hitchens was his opinion about waterboarding. Was that originally he would go on Fox News and he would say, waterboarding isn't torture. It's basically you're just getting your head soaked in water. And he would go on about it, and he wouldn't, you know, he would totally downplay it. And then somebody said, well, why don't you get waterboarded? And he's like, okay. You know, he agreed to it. He was waterboarded. He was waterboarded for, what, like 18 seconds?
I remember that, yeah.
Twice.
And then he said, and after that, he was like, I'm wrong. That's torture.
As if that's not torture, nothing is. And is his exact words.
And what an amazing example of everything that so many of us stand for and want to live up to in the atheism and the skepticism communities, that he would be willing to put his own assertion on the line that it was not torture, and that his mind could be changed by evidence.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to, is that, we have these huge disagreements with Hitchens, and honestly, that's one of the reasons that I like him so much, is that I think often with any sort of public figure, there's this great deal of pressure of putting this person in this camp or that camp, and Hitchens was someone that was kind of hard to define, and I think that the fact that I disagreed with him so strongly on a number of his political opinions actually made me like him more, because I think he made me a better skeptic. Yeah. That instead of me just circling the wagons and protecting somebody who's on my team, I actually had to judge him based on individual opinions and said, you know what? There are some really great people who have bad opinions about some things, and some really bad people who are sometimes right. And that I shouldn't just judge somebody based on what I perceived of them. And that's always been one of my criticisms of the Christian camps, that somebody says terrible, awful things, and often they get this parade of people on their side who are willing to start making excuses for them. I think that Hitch helped prevent me from becoming the thing that I detest in other people because of that example.
His disagreement with many of the sort of unstated beliefs of the atheism movement made the atheism movement stronger. And I'd like to say, I didn't meet Christopher Hitchens, but he briefly acknowledged my presence in a room. That's the best I can say. Back in February, I went to see Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens talk to a couple of rabbis at American Jewish University in L.A.
Wow.
And
that was the David Wolpe event?
That was it. Thank you. And, thanks to a friend of the show, Kathy, she had a VIP ticket. I got to go as long as I could make it down to L.A. And I got to see the man talk. And I never thought I would and this was after he looked worse at that talk than any of the Christopher Hitchens looks bad photos.
Yeah.
That, I mean, he was really having a hard time.
Yeah.
But he was up there on stage, and Sam Harris was really doing most of the talking, but occasionally someone would need to drop an anvil on something. Something rhetorically needed to be destroyed. So Sam Harris would point, and Christopher Hitchens would destroy. And it was just, it was amazing to watch. And I was in awe, and then I got to hang out in a room with him, and it's like, well, maybe I can shake the hand of Christopher Hitchens, and Sam Harris, and I met Sam Harris, and I had a great chat with him. But then Christopher Hitchens came in the room, and it became a mob, and I'm like, that man's sick. I'm not going to be a part of that. So I said, yeah, hey, he's like, eh. And that was it. But
I really do regret not getting the chance to see him speak.
Yeah.
That, you know, the thing, though, is that I have gotten a chance to see him speak, and I think we should all be incredibly fortunate that Christopher Hitchens was alive in an era where we have the technology to be able to record the things that he says and does.
Yeah.
And it becomes a lot harder to, you know, basically put words in his mouth the way that there have been with a lot of other remarkable people over the course of centuries.
Absolutely.
I do have a recent update, just received update. Would you like to hear the first post-mortem Hitch joke?
Okay, I'm dying to hear it.
Okay. Did you hear about Christopher Hitchens' deathbed conversion?
No.
Yeah, he's dying, so he asks for a priest. The priest became an atheist. Hey!
I just love these.
I love it.
These weird fantasies that a lot of these fundamentalists are coming out with, like, oh, he's standing before God, he's going to get you. It's just this weird sort of my big brother's going to beat you up moments that they have.
Yeah.
And I have a different thing. We can play this Pascal wagers game too. And I just imagine, okay, let's just say all three of us are just wrong about this God thing. Hitch is wrong.
Okay.
He's standing before Saint Peter, and he has to make an account for the things he's done, and they just look down that long podium at him. I bet you within 10 minutes, Hitch would have him crying.
And just before I heard the news, I saw a post that he did, or an article that he did about Nietzsche's what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And he's like, how does this make me stronger? And it was this complete teardown of that entire concept, including sort of a self, like, I used to say this. That was stupid of me.
Yeah, I love that about him, that he was always willing to change his own mind.
Yeah.
If he ever, you know, had an experience such as, unfortunately, getting cancer, that might change the evidence for him and take his belief in a different direction.
And on the other side of that, you showed me this talk he did with one of the Way of the Master guys.
Oh,
Todd
no.
Friel, this guy who I guess I would call him chronically stupid.
Oh, this must have been a bloodbath.
It was aggressively stupid. If you're not familiar with the Ray Comfort method of conversion, where you ambush someone with a rigged choose-your-own-adventure test, it's like you're playing Dungeons & Dragons where the dungeon master really has it in for you, and he's rigging stuff so that you'll tell him how great he is. And, oh, wow, it's really bad, but he actually tried this game on Hitch.
It's a choose-your-own-adventure where every question is, how did you feel when you killed that woman? You know, it's like, wait a minute, I didn't. Nope, that's not a part of it.
Wait, he actually sprang that on Hitch?
Yeah.
What happened? I've never seen this.
Oh, he basically spends about 10 minutes casually destroying this guy, who, I think at one point, this is the line that I always take from Hitch, is he asked him, don't you love God? That he gives you everything, and he watches for you, and he takes care of you, and he owns you. And he says, oh, that sounds terribly like living in North Korea.
It had the feeling of a puppy being slowly fed to a coal furnace.
Ouch!
It's weird because he was doing it on the man's own show. And remember his response to the North Korea thing? He was just like, "Oh, I don't think God is North Korea. You should ask Kim Jong-il. He has a different opinion."
Casual destruction is like the best way to describe his style of debating too. I would love watching him. Everyone else on the panel would be sitting up straight, looking all nice in their vest suits, and he would be slouched over on one elbow with the top two buttons of his shirt undone and his ankle resting on his knee, staring off into space with his white socks with black shoes exposed, by the way.
Sipping a scotch,
ignoring everyone until someone pointed to him and he like came out with the greatest nuclear device of any statement anybody could come to and just would nuke the entire panel with one sentence. It was incredible.
And that never changed.
Never.
And I do wonder at the sales figures of Johnny Walker Black right now. I'll be honest with you, not much of a Scotch fan, but I'm beginning to see the appeal.
I rather like Scotch myself. Okay. I'll have to spring for a bottle for Christmas.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Thank you for sitting through our Irish wake of Christopher Hitchens, or at least part of it. This conversation will definitely continue. But when we come back from the break, we're going to discuss Seattle Atheist's new advertising campaign with the Vice President of Seattle Atheist. See you in a minute.
Atheists celebrate Christmas too. Join Seattle Atheists in the Lake City neighborhood on Christmas Eve for board games, crafting projects for the kids, good conversation, music, lots of food, and holiday cheer. This potluck event is sure to be a hit.
Check out seattleatheist.org for information on this and other activities, and RSVP for Christmas Eve dinner through meetup.com.
Join us after today's show at the Office Bar and Grill in downtown Tacoma. Offering a wide selection of tap and bottled beer, a full bar of your favorite liquor, and a taste bud tantalizing menu, come on down and shoot the breeze with the Ask an Atheist crew. Who can argue with your motives? After all, you're at the office. The Office Bar and Grill is at 813 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas. Freely.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist on Clay 1180 AM. You can give us a call at 253-584-1480. If you got a story about Hitch, we'd love to hear it. If you want to talk to us about the Seattle Atheist Ad Campaign, definitely give us a call. So before we move on to the next subject, we do have one announcement that if you are free on December 29th at 8 p.m. at the Jewel Box Theater on 2322 2nd Avenue in Seattle, you can see Ask an Atheist presents The War on New Year's. And it'll be a live comedy event featuring Jeremy Whitman, Kermit Apio, and Kathy Sorbo, all very well-known and very funny comedians. It'll be $20 at the door, or you can go to our website and click on the link to Brown Paper Tickets to buy your tickets in advance. Again, that's $20 at the door, December 29th, Jewel Box Theater in Seattle. So, that's out of the way. Some stuff in the news. And, Seattle Atheist is a new campaign. And we have a prepared statement, and I'll just go right into it. For those of you who are not aware, Seattle Atheist has started a new ad campaign called 1 in 4 Washington, highlighting the number of people who are without God in Washington State. The main thrust of the campaign focuses on four people in common settings, suggesting that one of them is an atheist. The campaign has recently come under fire by the mass media and those in the atheism visibility movement for misrepresenting, or in some cases, wholly manufacturing those numbers. Initially, the producers of Ask an Atheist were also skeptical of those numbers, so Becky conducted some research into the studies involved, and to our surprise, we found corroboration. Now, here it is. Now, the ERA survey, the American Religious Identification Survey, this is a highly regarded survey that looks at trends and changes in religious identification over time in the United States. Since the U.S. Census Bureau is constitutionally prohibited from asking about religion, it's included in the U.S. Census Bureau's reports on demographics. Based on the stated beliefs rather than the religious identification in 2008, 70% of Americans believe in a personal God. Roughly 12% of Americans are atheists, no God, or agnostic, unknowable or unsure. And another 12% are deistic, a higher power but no personal God. That's national. Questioners in this survey don't supply a scripted list of possible answers to the questions of religious preference, but rather allow respondents to give their own answer. For purposes of analysis, answers are then grouped under broad categories. For example, Eastern religions include Shinto, Baha'i, Taoist, and Hindu. Catholic includes Roman, Eastern, and Greek rites. Nuns in the ERA survey are respondents who indicated the following on their survey for religious preference. None, no religion, humanistic, ethical culture, agnostic, atheist, or secular. Note that Scientologists, New Agers, spiritual but not religious, Unitarian Universalists, deists, and pagans are not included in the nun category for the national state figures. They are grouped under New Religious Movement / Other. In 2008, for the nun category amongst Washington state respondents, the number was 25%. Up from 15% in 1990 for the same state. States with comparable or greater percentages of nuns, Vermont had 34%, New Hampshire had 29%, Wyoming had 28%, Maine had 25%, Oregon and Nevada had 24%, Idaho and Delaware had 23%. Our conclusion is that on a Washington state level, 25% is a valid number for those without religion. What should be understood by critics of the ad campaign is that these figures are focused on Washington state, and not on the nationally understood figure of 15%. We ask that significant number of people who are criticizing this campaign to basically do the research and see what the campaign is about. However, we do have some concerns about the way this ad campaign is handled. While we essentially agree with the purpose and the intent of the campaign, labeling people as atheists when they intentionally avoid the phrase is a misstep. While the wider discussion we have on atheism here on the show would include many of these people, we believe people reserve the right to label themselves. In hindsight, we would suggest 1 in 4 in Washington is good without God. We also wish Seattle atheists would have been more forthcoming in their facts and understandings, and suggest that in the future, an official fact-checker should be part of the ad campaigns. Please keep in mind that the board of directors of Seattle atheists are not just fellow travelers, they are also close friends. All three producers of Ask an Atheist are former Seattle Atheist board members. While we have stepped away from stewardship of that organization to focus on Ask an Atheist efforts, the organization remains near and dear to our hearts. They also support this show through advertising. To that end, we would like to state publicly that Ask an Atheist is committed to supporting Seattle Atheists now and in the future. With us now is Jerry, a friend of the show and a vice president of Seattle Atheists, among a few other things.
Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thanks, Mike. And Sam.
Hi.
So, Jerry, I do want to say that I've been following this, too, and I've been sort of bounced back and forth. I just got the numbers of the corroboration just this morning. Do you think it's necessary to put numbers on an advertising campaign like this? I mean, I love the tone, but are the numbers a big part of it?
Well, I think it is important to have at least some degree of accuracy, and we were, of course, aiming to try to get as close to that as possible. I think it would help, though, to give a little bit of background first on this. Originally, we started raising funds for an advertising campaign over 2 years ago, and our original idea was to go with the sort of I'm an Atheist campaign, such as I'm a doctor and I'm an atheist, or I'm a teacher and I'm an atheist.
Kind of like the Mormon campaigns.
Exactly. And of course, you see our problem then. what happened, of course, was that Metro changed their bus ad policy, and it restricted nonprofits from advertising.
This was a big to-do in the Seattle area, for those of you who aren't local, because of the advertising that people were trying to put on the buses. It was some sort of pro-Palestinian, specifically anti-Israel campaign, that and the Seattle Metro basically said that they don't want their advertisements being used for political speech.
It kind of reminds me a bit of what went down in Olympia with a lot of the sign thing, which rather than getting into a lengthy, I guess you say, detailed debate over an issue, they just kind of shut down the whole thing.
Right, right.
And that does touch on a good point. In coming up with a good policy, we didn't want to offend people like the same way that the FFRF did. And as you recall, their sign said to the effect that religion hardens hearts and enslaves minds. And especially at this time of the year, we didn't want to go for that sort of message.
Yeah, I hear you there. And in fact, I mean, Seattle, like I said in the statement, Seattle Atheists is a organization really important to me. When I moved up here to Tacoma from Arizona, from Phoenix, I didn't know anybody here, and I didn't really know how to. I didn't want to like do the things I usually did. I was trying to find a new group of people to be friends with and have new things to talk about. And Seattle Atheists just really, absolutely. Did a very good job in making me a part of the community up here. I've never really as felt connected to a place as I have here in Seattle, and Seattle Atheist is a big part of that. And one of the first things I was involved in with Seattle Atheist was the response to that FFRF sign. Mm-hmm. And it was Seattle Atheist as an organization said, well, we agree that Seattle, you know, or that atheists need to be a part of the holiday thing. We didn't want something so negative to speak for us.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I personally don't disagree with anything the FFRF put on that sign. I just thought that, talk about the wrong place to put it up. I think that one of the real advantages that I've always liked about the movement was that we never threw the first punch.
Right.
And here was when we were just walking up and clocking someone. So I think that I was always really happy with the sign that Seattle Atheist put up because it was just simply Happy Holidays type message, and it really kind of rung home the fact that we don't need to go negative to be controversial and get press. I mean, you remember the response that KCPQ, that's the local Fox affiliate, had?
Yeah.
Not only did they spell atheist wrong, they spelled it like atheist, like we have the most ath of any group, but they, oh, this just furthers the atheist war on Christmas, and yeah. I always kind of like that. Ask an atheist, or the Seattle Atheist knew that they didn't have to overplay their hand, that they didn't have to play an ace when they knew that I can play a four and it gets exactly what I need.
And to that end, the very next year, I mean, it's not the sign that eventually got put down in the Capitol building, but I suggested Happy Holidays from Seattle Atheists, and that was essentially the sign that we put down in the Capitol building, and we got the same article from Q13. It was still, it wasn't atheist, it was atheists. We are the most atheists. We declare war on Christmas by asking people to have a happy holiday. Yeah, Q13. Good job there, guys.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to also point out too that even in the recent news stories about our current ads, we're still being held responsible for the plaque and also for the Yes Virginia, There Is No God ads that were on the side of buses a couple years ago.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised at not just the media's inability to track down who's for what ad, but even in the visibility movement to not really check to see what exactly the ad is about. And it's important to and this is something that I understood to begin with. It's 1 in 4 Washington. We're talking about Washington State. That 15% still holds up really good nationally, but in Washington State, it's a little different.
It's a bit higher here.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I think the number's probably even a little bit higher than 25%. I think there's a certain stigma that stops people from wanting to be open about their non-belief, and that the A word kind of sticks in some people's craw. And I think that that's one of the reasons that organizations like Ask an Atheist and Seattle Atheists and Auburn Freethought and all of our advertisers, this is why we exist, is that because there's such a stigma, it's hard to feel like you're alone. It's hard to feel like you're the only one. And then when somebody asks you that, you don't want to answer honestly because it almost sounds like it's an invitation to an argument.
Yeah.
And that's really what our whole ad campaign was really about, was trying to address the issue of the stigma or being stigmatized. Especially just the word itself. As you were saying before, yes, we agree there are many people who do not want to use the term atheist to describe themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But we were, our campaign was reaching out to a much wider audience in terms of the term itself.
Right.
If you do not believe in a God, well, you are an atheist. If you choose not to call yourself that, that's fine.
And I understand that, but then when you go to the website for the campaign, 1in4wa.org, it says 1 in 4 is an atheist. And that's not something that's a statement that in effect in the larger conversation that we have on Ask an Atheist, I believe is supportable because of the very simple definition of atheism we stick with.
It's a broad one.
Yeah, but in the wider discussion in which a bus ad will take place in, that's going to be a remark that may not be as accurate as we would like it to be. And that's where my problem comes in.
I had a philosophy teacher who once said that you shouldn't write so that you can be understood. You should write so that you can't be misunderstood.
Yeah.
And sometimes those little differences can stop the sort of flood of criticism and anger that comes your way. And, you know, I can't, you know, demand that essay have, you know, this, you know, perfect crystal ball to know exactly how people are going to respond. But what you really learn is that we're not a group that is well represented or well defended
yeah.
in the media at large. So we have to do that extra due diligence to make sure not only are our T's crossed and our I's dotted, but the mention of just having an FAQ page that explains the numbers
yeah.
would have probably saved some time. But the media is so lazy. I mean, they couldn't even look this stuff up. It's not like it's that hard of a Google search to find out we didn't put up the FMRF
signs. And I understand that this is a nuanced opinion, and I can only say that you're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We have nuanced opinions. Deal.
Yeah, it's just hard. Any sort of ad campaign, because I think we're just in a position where people want to see bad things about us. And
yeah.
That just makes better news.
Even in the atheism community, we do have a tendency to really turn on our own sometimes. I mean, it's there. It's human psychology. We're not really all that different from anybody else.
And of all people, it would be the friendly atheist.
Yeah,
who seem to have the most.
That was a bit of a surprise.
Yes.
But you know, I'm planning on taking all of the facts that Becky found out and our statement on it. I'm going to make it public, and I want to see. I'd like to see what Hemant has to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to understand in John's response to the friendly atheist post that, you know, the friendly atheist seemed to understand what we were trying to say with the campaign.
One thing I'd like to interject, though, is keep in mind that we are a group of volunteers. We
yeah.
are not professional advertisers or marketers.
And that was what I was going to – that's the thing is that I know in my time on the board of Seattle Atheists, we were sort of changing from a social organization that was mainly concerned with a social substrate with, you know, for atheists to exist in. We kind of have that absent any organization right now. And for the record, the atheism movement in the Seattle area and the Puget Sound area is not as balkanized as people seem to think it is. We have a lot of organizations, but they all have sort of their little areas. It's really a grassroots, bottom-up approach to the atheism visibility movement. And that's what I think one of the strengths of Seattle and the Puget Sound area. But when I was on the board of directors, we were going through some growing pains. And we were sort of transforming from a social organization into an activist organization. And that's a transformation which I'm led to understand continues with this present board. And the sort of the production values for this ad campaign are very different from the production values we had for the first campaign. And I think maybe there might have been getting a little bit lost in the moment of creating the campaign that maybe some of the...
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, some of the work here and there maybe.
And we were under a tight deadline too.
Yeah,
we actually rushed this and got this done in an incredible short period of time.
I will say that, you know, just criticisms aside, I really love the campaign. I love what its intent is. I love its tone. Because really what it's saying is that you already know atheists, even if you don't know that you know us. So we're your neighbors. We, you know, deliver your mail. We serve you food. We're your boss. We're your employee. We're your friend. And that you already know that we're a good person. You just don't know that label yet.
Yeah.
I especially like the one where it shows the family decorating the Christmas tree. And it reminds me of the fact that we're also doing gift wrapping.
We're doing gift wrapping. We're having a Christmas potluck.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, not only I'm still a member of Seattle Atheists. I don't really talk about Seattle Atheists in the past tense. And let me tell you, up until this morning, I thought we were going to be having a very different conversation because we couldn't find corroboration for Seattle Atheist numbers. And as a member of the atheist community, we felt it important to say that no, the numbers aren't real. However, we have corroboration. The other side of that is the message of those the essential message of that ad campaign is the same essential message of Ask an Atheist.
Yeah, that we're just normal folks, and that I've always said that if you want to judge us, I can't make somebody like me or dislike me.
Yeah.
I just ask that you just choose to judge me based on me rather than what some other guy who's never met me says about me.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things that in my conversations with Becky earlier, for example, I was trying to stress the fact that, yes, it's possible we may have been incorrect. But I think that's one of our strengths as atheists is that we are willing to look at the evidence and to accept when we are wrong.
Much like Christopher Hitchens.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be the big thing. The question of everyone sort of jumping on it, you know, because I know that one of the criticisms we have of religious groups, and I mentioned this during the Hitchens segment, is that there's this tendency to sort of circle the wagons and just go, oh, he's on our team and the bad guys are attacking him, therefore he must be right. Do you think that sometimes we might overcompensate?
I'm certain we do in some places.
We just throw somebody under the bus. Like, I wonder if there's sort of a knee-jerk thing here that we don't want to get tarred by something. Because even when we were in the mindset up until like last night where we thought this was going to be a much more critical look at the ad campaign,
mm-hmm.
I really took no joy in it because I like these people. These
yeah.
are my, you know, Jerry, you're a friend. You know, I love you, Jerry. And, you know, it's something that I don't like doing. And that was one of these moments where I'm like, I don't want to be mean to Jerry.
Yeah. I call him the hardest working man in atheism. It's a tongue in cheek statement, but it's pretty true. He's on so many different organizations. He helps us out. He helps Humanist Washington out. He's the president of Humanist Washington. He's vice president of Seattle. And everybody involved has like 15 different jobs that they do. And
I was going to say, I won't mention the 14-hour gift wrapping yesterday.
But this is what it's like when you have an up-and-coming social movement like this. There's just so much work to do. And sometimes things get lost, but this wasn't one of those times. And I would ask my fellow atheists to do as we did and look at the evidence next time. I mean, it's out there. You can see it. You can read it. And if you want to challenge the evidence, that's one thing. But look and see what you got. And finally, I want to say, Ask an Atheist and Seattle Atheists. We see ourselves as partners, you know, partners in crime.
Most definitely.
And that's never going to change as far as I'm concerned. So unless they suddenly become part of the Catholic League. I mean, that might change things.
Oh, that'll totally change things. Then I'll throw you under the bus, Jerry.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Thanks for this. We're going to go into the break. When we come back, we're going to answer some emails.
So, picking up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We were talking about Hitch. We were talking about Seattle Atheists. We're going to answer some emails now. If you'd like to talk about any of those things, give us a call. So our first email comes from Kaya from Connecticut, and it goes a little like this. I would love to hear you guys discuss religious people being dramatic and causing controversy about books, movies, television, etc. I'm sure you hear it in the news all the time, and it gets obnoxious.
Yeah, this was somebody, Kaya, sent us a link to what I assume is a long anti-Harry Potter screed. And
probably very long, is my guess.
Yeah.
Harry Potter's really just kind of the new incarnation of something that the Christian fundamentalists do, I don't know, once every 10 years?
That seems to be about it, because in the 80s it was Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, yes.
In the 90s I think it was Pokemon a bit.
It's kind of like Pennywise the Clown from It,
where yeah.
it goes into hibernation for about 10 years, and it comes out and gobbles some more children up.
Comes out of the sewer.
I was going to go with the Shadows from Babylon 5, but that's every 1,000 years, so a couple of orders of magnitude.
Yeah, Pennywise is definitely more apropos
okay.
here.
Very good.
Yeah, there's a definite stink of Tim Curry on this. But yeah,
that was Tim Curry?
That was Tim Curry.
Oh, my mind is officially
How could you not
blown.
Know that was Tim Curry?
Clown makeup. Clowns are scary.
Yeah. The tendency is to just want to look away at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, exactly.
That was double barrel Tim Curry. Anyways, this is that little reoccurring Pennywise attack on whether it's Dungeons & Dragons, Harry Potter. There's a little to-do over Pokemon, but I like to call it the war on fun. Every single time there's something cultural that, let's just say people enjoy a little bit more than Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's especially as a fan base among children, and especially amongst the fundamentalist flock themselves, these people tend to really freak out about it and try to say, this is Satan, this is Satan. And depending on how deranged a church is by religion, that list just gets longer and longer to the point, I mean, Rich's church wouldn't let him watch any secular
movies. Any movies at all. It wouldn't let him listen to the radio, even though he worked in radio. Weird.
Rich didn't see the movie Ghostbusters until last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
It seems like they want the world to look like it's the world depicted in Jesus Camp, where if it's not directed at Jesus, it's crap.
Yeah,
as it were, you know.
It comes into the spiritual warfare sort of thing that really the devil has nothing better to do than to make secular movies. I mean, he's like a producer at this point. And the ones that I always find really funny about their freakouts, the Harry Potter one was my favorite simply because of the brick wall they hit with that one, is that too many of their own kids just loved Harry Potter.
Yeah, absolutely.
He really was, in the words of John Lennon, bigger than Jesus.
Although I tend to agree with him. Harry Potter is evil.
Harry Potter. I like Harry Potter.
Not a Harry Potter fan, personally.
No. My whole take on the general subject of people freaking out about media or the arts is, you know, personally, I think the whole point of the arts is to challenge thought and perception, and you can't do that in a homogenized world. So when these people spaz out and say that they want everyone to think and feel exactly the same way about entertainment or anything else, they're really just saying they want to make the world more boring and less challenging, and I am not in favor of a boring, unchallenging world.
And this is, I think, why a lot of Christian art, I guess you could call it that, aside from something done, but you know, commissioned by great artists like, you know, Michelangelo, a lot of modern Christian stuff, whether it's Christian television, Christian books, Christian movies, are so bad. Christian comedy, especially.
Right.
Is that comedy is its very nature. Art is that challenging thing. And how can you enjoy comedy if it's just kind of kissing up to something and how great something is? That's not funny. That's not fun. That's not challenging.
You can't enjoy it.
How's that? All right, you guys ready?
Ready.
All right. Sit tight, because here comes Matt from Alabama. Why are you an atheist? Libby.
For the same reasons why you, Matt, are an atheist about Quetzalcoatl.
Mike for the block.
Lack of evidence. That's the only thing that'll change my mind. If you can prove it, you can't just argue it into existence like apologetics. It only convinces the already convinced. Give me hard fact. Give me evidence.
Me for the finish. Your universe is too big for any god you've ever described for me. Yeah.
And that's that.
There you go. Okay? I think we got that good.
I liked that one.
Yes!
It was simple.
Next one, Dave from the Internet. Wow, haven't had this one in a while. Where did you go, Internet? Where's the love? Where's the love?
Come back.
Although your show is not about politics, religion and politics often mix. The debates on abortion and how evolution is taught seem to be where they mix most often. These issues affect how people vote in many elections, or issues that I often hear people say, I'm voting my faith. How is this considered an acceptable statement? In order to allow for freedom of religion, it would seem that we need to separate religion from the voting process. Isn't saying I'm voting based on my faith the same as I'm voting for my race?
I wouldn't say it's exactly the same. I would say that it is a really stupid reason to vote for or against somebody. That I think that on one level, the difference of worldview and beliefs is something that everybody votes based on. I just think that, oh, this person is of the same religion as me, and that therefore means that they're a moral person. I think that's demonstrably false.
Yeah.
I concur.
And that's the thing, is these are people who believe that their morality is based on their religion, and we're supposed to base our voting on how we feel about the issues. And I say the same thing about politicians, is that I expect their faith or what they believe in, as far as a religious faith or lack of a religious faith, to influence the way they make decisions about the world. Now, the decisions themselves have to be secular and hopefully based on the evidence where evidence exists. But let's be honest right now. Governance is not a scientific process. There's a lot there that, I mean, sometimes we have to vote when we don't have statistics on things, when there's no clear definition. I mean, the time for making climate changes was really well before we had clear research on whether or not climate change was a real thing.
True.
It was 100 years ago we should have been doing something about this, but the evidence wasn't there. It's just not as clean a process as we like to pretend.
I won't pretend that I don't vote based on my opinion of somebody's religious beliefs. There are things that are a total deal breaker for me. I won't vote for a creationist, for instance, because I think it says something about their judgment that they're going to choose ideology over demonstrable fact.
Right.
And that is going to bleed over into other decisions they make.
Yeah, I share that opinion for sure.
And the First Amendment is specifically about letting people, including people in government, have opinions about religion. It's supposed to, and it prevents us from laws being passed advocating religion. And as long as these laws don't advocate religion in some way, then we're fine. When we start talking about intelligent design, once we start talking about many other issues like that, abortion is usually among them. Now we're talking about religious preference, and that does contravene the First Amendment.
Yeah, that comes down to what they call the lemon test, not having this entanglement with religion or promoting a certain religious belief. Like, we've had this discussion about anti-gay rights politicians, really, when you dig down deep, it's just a religious plea. And that they want to, they say, oh, I'm horribly picked upon because someone else is not allowed to disobey my religion. How can they have a life that's different from mine? They should have to follow my religious rules. That's not persecution. That's an institution of Christian privilege.
And it's, we did a 6-month search on a non-religious argument against civil rights, and we couldn't find one. So, from our perspective, there is no anti-gay marriage amendment that isn't religious in nature.
Or a red herring.
So our next email comes to us from Mike from Louisville, Texas, and it's about goblin atheism, which is a phrase I like. There's a type of atheism I call goblin atheism, and it is my opinion that this label can be helpful when responding to theistic accusations. I define goblin atheism as the mythical monster atheist that doesn't really exist. It is a definition of atheist generated by theists without actually observing, interacting with, or describing actual atheists. Goblin atheists are angry at God, have no meaning in their life, deify science, and much, much more. I think this label can be helpful because it clearly tells theists that their understanding of atheism is a misunderstanding, and what they know about atheists is a myth. But then again, theists are used to believing mythical beings are real. How do you feel about labeling the misinformed and ignorant accusations of theists as goblin atheism?
Well, I think it's a useful term, and I like it too, but I have to say this might be kind of an unpopular opinion to express, but I think they do exist, but in much smaller numbers than it's often made out to seem. And that's actually why we do this show, to prove by example that we outnumber the non-goblins, outnumber the goblin atheists, and we're actually pretty cool people and nice to talk to. But I have to say, I've met a few.
I have too. And just as among the religious, you've got the people who are cutting off the fingers of their wife to prevent them from going to school and stuff like that. I mean, there are weird people on both sides of the fence.
Right, there are weird people everywhere.
Yeah.
Atheism is not exempt from that.
And I would say I like the phrase goblin atheism, and I might include it in my lexicon, but I'm not going to pretend that goblin atheists don't exist.
Yeah, we've gotten emails from bad examples of atheists before.
Yes, we certainly have.
Even just recently, we had a guy who was basically parking his offensive bumper stickers outside of churches trying to pick fights with people.
Yeah.
And really, when you come down to it, how is that any different from what Fred Phelps does, just on a smaller scale?
Yeah. And it seems like, especially now during the holidays, a lot of weird people are coming out of the woodwork at us. And it's just these people, these strange atheists do exist. They are not in the majority. They don't speak for us. And that's why we need to have shows like this one.
Right.
So that we can be louder than
them. Also, I wouldn't necessarily say that their craziness stems from atheism, too. No. Because atheism is such a non-ism. It actually isn't an ism. That's what the A means.
Yeah.
It means not this. You really can't derive anything from it other than not any of the things that come from that thing.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird, thankfully, though in a weird sort of way, it does put us in an unfair position.
Yeah, I agree. And I love the phrase, and I think you might hear it on the show a bit. So our next email is kind of a big one, and it comes to us from Matt from Los Angeles. And he writes, I left the Catholic Church about 12 years ago and joined a Unitarian Universalist congregation just over 6 years ago. I have stuck with UUism because it has allowed me the opportunity to exercise my doubts about God and faith. Over time, I have become comfortable with self-identifying as an atheist. Your podcast has been helpful to me in that process, and I thank you. Lately, I have been facing some significant life struggles and find my Catholic mental self-abuse left over from all those years ago coming back to rear its ugly head. I think things like, there is a God and he is punishing you for being an atheist. I wish I could reach in and yank that nasty little voice right out of my head, but can't and sometimes can't even turn it off. Any recommendations? How do I make my atheism stick and not get sucked back into the land of make-believe just so I don't have to feel like some malevolent fallacy that I was brainwashed into believing in all those years ago is out to get me?
First of all, I think it's really awesome that our show has helped you become comfortable in identifying as an atheist. That's great to hear, and thank you. And second, I know how it feels. I completely understand what you're saying, and the best advice I can give you is to surround yourself with support, people who think the way you think. You know, join meetup groups. You're in LA, you should be able to find some pretty good active meetup circles of atheists and free thinkers. You need to kind of use the resources at your fingertips, like Facebook and social networking, to build a social network for yourself of people who can affirm your atheism for you and help you through this difficult time where you're trying to kind of close the God box in your brain. Mm-hmm. But it will close. So many of us have been there. You just have to stick with critical thought. It'll close.
This isn't a case where he's beginning to doubt his atheism and is just looking to have his arguments shored up. This is basically brainwashing or indoctrination that he experienced as a child.
Yes.
That he's still fighting. It's a different beast.
The vestigial limbs of dogma.
Maybe I didn't make it clear, but I do understand that. I went through exactly the same thing of fighting off what I'd been indoctrinated with since childhood, even though I logically knew that there couldn't possibly be a God, that this religious stuff couldn't be real. I still had the feelings of terror based on that indoctrination, and all I can say is, keep friends around you who know how you feel and who can help support you through it.
I'd say, Matt, this is exactly why a lot of atheist groups exist, is that you're not alone, that there are people who feel exactly the same way as you. I'm personally fortunate that I didn't have an abusive upbringing, a religious upbringing, where I had a lot of stuff forced down my throat. So I'm always at a little bit of a loss when I hear things like this. So I would highly recommend just talking to people in an atheist organization or meetup group, because there's going to be someone there that knows what this is like and has gone through it. I'd also highly recommend Rich and Deanna Joy Lyons' podcast, Living After Faith, which is about this exact thing.
Yeah.
Right.
The process of walking away from religious belief and these sort of leftover nagging doubts and sort of hurt feelings that have been sort of attached to this label that you found is actually an accurate representation of you, and how to move on with your life.
Yeah, and Rich and Deanna are on the show a lot, and we talk about this, so I definitely suggest you check them out. And I'll say I'm kind of in Mike's boat. I was never indoctrinated in the same way. My parents saw to that. But I do have doubts, and I do have my off days, and I everybody, especially when we're used to thinking critically, we doubt everything. It's part of the atheist nature, and there are days when I doubt myself.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, talking to your friends, having that support out there, having the support right outside this door, of, you know, I mean, it's all really helpful, especially when you're out among people as an atheist. And I'll tell you something about myself. I actually thought about becoming part of the clergy of the Unitarian Universalist Church once upon a time. I actually applied and started talking to people at a school, and then promptly discovered that it still required 2 years of Bible study, and said, no, that's not what I'm about, so skip that.
Bible study and get certified. That's like being one of the official DMs of the RPGA.
Anyway, Matt, the RPG. I just want to say to Matt specifically, I do get what you're going through, and if it helps at all, friend me on Facebook. I'll talk to you anytime you need somebody to bounce ideas off of and to just say, hey, I know how it feels.
Yeah, that kind of goes for all of us. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you again, Matt. Please. Like to hear how it goes.
Yeah, and if you have something you'd like to ask us, something you'd like to say us, something you'd like to comment on, something we've done, go to our website, askanatheist.tv, hit the big red candy-like shiny button on the top, and... let us know what you think.
Yeah, and as usual, our voicemail number is 206-420-0997. Now, we mentioned it in a commercial, but we are going to the office, Bar and Grill, on Pacific Avenue in Tacoma, and we will be toasting the late, great Christopher Hitchens, and we'll be continuing this conversation, so we hope to see you out there. Any closing thoughts on the Hitch thing? Or?
Goodbye, Hitch. We'll miss you, and debates just aren't going to be as fun without you there.
That's true. I will miss Hitch, too. I want to share, before we go, a really great quote from Hitch himself. In an interview, somebody asked him whether he thought maybe he burned the candle at both ends, and he said, I did, but I found it gave a lovely light. I love that.
That is awesome. All right, so this is Ask an Atheist. Again, our voicemail number is 206-420-0997. You can talk to us, email us on askanatheist.tv. You can go to our forum at forum.askanatheist.tv. There's a bunch of ways you can talk to us. My name is Sam Olvey. With me today was Libby Grant and Mike Gillis. Our special guest was Vice President of Seattle Atheist Jerry Schiffelbein. As usual, our music was by Chris Coleman. Our production assistants were Rebecca Friedman and Darren Garvin. We'll see you at the office. You guys have a good week.
Season's greetings and happy holidays from Clay, KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma.